Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
The ring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You son of a bitch, get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power, black power, black power. I'm so glad that we made it another year. This is 2011. We have now made it to another year. 2010 was a great year for the new Black Panther Party. Hopefully we will make, well, I shouldn't even say hopefully, because I know for a fact we will make greater strides this year to make it a more Blacktastic year this year. We will do more as far as the people are concerned. We will attend more functions. We will have more meetings. We will have more workshops that will help our people to become more intelligent in any form or fashion, via medical, via economics, via financial, via just understanding the beast and what we have to deal with as a people. Maybe we will have more things in dealing and rearing with our children and become trained and understand just different things that we have to deal with as a people. We have so many stresses that we have as a people that we have to overcome, post-traumatic stress that we have to deal with as a Black nation. And today, upon our call today, we definitely have a prominent person that I've met. I had the occasion, the pleasure, the honor to meeting, and I really, really, really valued conversation that we had upon the Black Power Movement. One of Dr. Khaled's personal people that he worked with, one of the sisters, one of our Red sisters, that I think she does a lot. I know she does a lot for her people. And we kind of wanted her to come on tonight to do a bit of talk for us. So right now what we're going to do is going to bring her on in just a minute. But first we would like to go into a bit of a commercial break, if you will. We're going to play a little bit in regards to our Marcus Garvey, one of our generals that shall be recognized. Black power.
You have given me on this my return to the United States of America. I have been absent from this country for 5 months, being away in the West Indies and in Central America, traveling in the interest of the movement I represent as its President General. During my absence from America, I had occasion to observe with a great degree of disgust how not almighty the so-called leaders of the Negro race are. In that, immediately after I took my departure from the country, the men who are supposed to represent and Negro thought in America endeavored to represent me to the government of the United States by starting me with anarchy and with an intention to destroy the loyalty of Negroes to the government of this great country. These representations were made to the state and other departments, which occasioned me great embarrassment in returning to these stores. As by such information to the departments of state, the instructions were given therefrom to the various cuts Council officers outside of the country representing the government not to visit my passport for return to this country. I had ultimately to appeal to the good services of the Honorable Charles Evans Hughes, Secretary of State, whom I believe represents truly and thoroughly the spirit of the American Constitution. I explained to him the situation and he immediately gave instructions that my passport be visited for a return to the United States of America. This action of his defeated the dispossession made by the enemies of my organization and by the enemies of the Negro race to prevent my return to my sphere of labor. With all their embarrassment, I am once more in the United States of America, and it is for me to avow not only my loyalty to the Constitution, laws, and government of the United States, but also avow that loyalty that is characteristic of the members of the Universal Equal Employment Association of Government. The Universal Equal Employment Association teaches its members everywhere to be loyal to government, but at the same time to be loyal to the great race of which we are members. As an organization, we desire our educational, industrial, social, and political advancement. Because of this desire, we are loyal to ourselves and to our Constitution. But it keeps us loyal does not mean that we are disloyal to any government or that we have no sympathy with other races. We love humanity. We desire peace and anything the Universal Negro Movement Association and I can do for the advancement of the cause of humanity and for the permanent establishment of peace, we shall be glad to do. I am now convinced more than ever that the Negro lacks proper leadership. The men who have led in the past are incapable. I therefore appeal to the new pattern of the streets of ours to give us leadership. Leadership that is unselfish. Leadership that knows no price. We can do no better than copy the leadership of the great Anglo-Saxon race. That leadership that came to the world, William Pitt, William Stuart Gladstone, and Israeli, and then carefully. And last but not least among them all, a brilliant Lloyd George. Fellow citizens of Africa, I greet you in the name of the Universal Negro Employment Association and African Communities League of the World. You may ask, what organization is that? It is for me to inform you that the Universal Negro Employment Association is an organization that seeks to unite into one solid body the 400 million Negroes of the world, the link of the 15 million Negroes of the United States of America with the 20 million Negroes of the West Indies, the 40 million Negroes of South and Central America, with the 280 million Negroes of Africa, for the purpose of securing our industrial, commercial, educational, social, and political conditions. As you are aware, the world in which we live today is divided into separate race groups and different nationalities. Each race and each nationality is endeavoring to work out its own destiny to the exclusion of other races and other nationalities. We hear of a cry of England for the Englishman, of France for the Frenchman, of Germany for the German, of Ireland for the Irish, of Palestine for the Jews, of Japan for the Japanese, of China for the Chinese. We of the Universal Negro Employment Association are raising the cry of Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. There are 400 million Africans in the world who have Negro blood coursing through their veins, and we believe that the time has come to unite these 400 million people for the one common purpose of bettering their conditions. The great problem of the Negro for the last 500 years has been that of disunity. No one or no organization ever succeeded in uniting the Negro race. But within the last 4 years, the Universal Negro Employment Association has worked wonders in bringing together in one fold 4 million organized Negroes who are scattered in all parts of the world, in the 48 states of the American Union, all the West Indian Islands, and the countries of South and Central America and Africa. These 4 million people are working to convert the rest of the 400 million scattered all over the world. And it is for this purpose that we are asking you to join our ranks and to do the best you can to help us to bring about an emancipated race. If anything praiseworthy is to be done, it must be done through unity. And it is for that reason that the Universal Negro Movement Association calls upon every Negro in the United States to rally to this standard. We want to unite the Negro race in this country. We want every Negro to work for one common object, that of building a nation of his own on the great continent of Africa. But all Negroes all over the world are working for the establishment of a government in Africa, things that it will be realized in another few years. We want the moral exercise of support of every Negro to make the dream a possibility. Already, this organization has established itself in Nigeria, West Africa, and is endeavoring to do all possible to develop that Negro country to become a great industrial and commercial commonwealth. Pioneers have been sent by this organization to Nigeria, and they are now laying the foundations upon which the 400 million Negroes of the world will build. If you believe that the Negro has a soul, if you believe that the Negro is a man, if you believe that Negro was endowed with a sacred community, but you are the same kind of creator, then you must acknowledge that one other thing have done, Negro can do. We want to build up cities, nations, governments, industries of our own in Africa, so that we'll be able to have a chance to rise from the lowest to the highest position in the African commonwealth.
Black power. Black power. We're experiencing extreme difficulty on the terms of technical. I'm unable to get into the chat room, but until then, give us a few minutes just upon that. Anyway, throughout our 10-point program, we have a lot in common with the Red Nation. Of course, we know that. Because here you have the same group that they practically destroyed and wiped them out. You have the same person that ripped us off, that killed us, murdered us, and various different diabolical things to us that have done to them. Within our 10-point program is governed for that. We talk about the same rapid dog that bit you, bit us. Because we went through some of the same issues, it was a story that I read about that basically, you have up on the Cahokia Mounds. I don't know if anybody's familiar with East St. Louis, but they have an area called Cahokia Mounds. And if you notice, all around St. Louis, and just different parts of the country, you have all these different states, even the states that are named after Indians, red people. You have the Cahokia Mounds, and because due to the Cahokia Mounds, upon that happening, you had a particular soldier that they had that was against uniting with the white man, that was against working with the white man, that did not want to have anything to do with the white man. Because of that, he still, his people, or one of his people, basically turned his back upon them. And of course, they understood, and what the same thing that they did to us in the 1960s and 70s, they put crack within our community to flood it with crack within our community because of the Black Panther Party was definitely making changes within our nation. Because of that, they did that. They did it with the Red Nation. What they did was they took the alcohol and spread it around, and that became a weakness of some of our Red Nation. And because of that, you had the brother, the warrior brother, that was not uniting with the people at all. And you had certain people from his particular tribe that wasn't trying to hear it. And, of course, he was taken out because of that in Cahokia Mounds. So that definitely goes down in history as a key portion of what some of our people will do to despite us wanting to not work with the white man, the pale face, because we do not want to deal with him and deal with their works and their rules and their laws, and because it's not for us, because we had our own way. The Red Nation had their own way of doing things, and the Black Nation has their own way of doing things. Yeah, so we have this experience. We had to go into this as a people and all these different things that we have to deal with and we shouldn't have to deal with. We don't want to be a part of this white nation. We want our own nation established. That's why we have the New Black Panther Party and we have other organizations, the NIA, that is not amongst and fellowship with the white nation. So what's wrong with black people having their own nation? What's wrong with the red man having their own nation? What's wrong with any of that? What's wrong with us establishing our own government? What's wrong with us working with ourselves and not with others that are against us, that have historically ruined us, that have killed, raped, and murdered us throughout history? I mean, I don't have to keep saying the same old stuff, but it's just like some of us are still not getting the message. Some of us are not working with it. Some of us are still dialoguing and doing what we feel do, business as usual. We're not understanding that we are being destroyed constantly in the prison system. We're being destroyed constantly within our so-called schools and education system. The same exact people that run that are running this. And we got all these different channels of different habits that we have as a people. We have the drug problem. We have the living rain problem. Yes, it's a problem because it's not used constructively. It's not used to empower us as a people. It's not doing any good for us that we constantly, our children are looking up to them to be our guides instead of us being our own role models for our own families. Because you have that kind of way. I just don't understand why we just can't stand up and live and love and be within our own nature. And our own nation and things that we're supposed to do to keep it African. Why we can't keep it African? And we have to go back to that. And we have to begin to start creating other allies across this nation. Okay, right now we're finally up. I've stalled long enough. Now I can bring the sister on. Black Power.
Power, warrior woman, good peace
yes,
and love.
Sorry about that, Queen. First, I must apologize to you, but we were experiencing some technical difficulties. I'm trying to get this thing up, and you know how the pale face is, so.
Yeah, really. We just expect it all the time. That's why we always say, okay, plan B.
Right, I had to go into plan B mode, definitely.
Yeah.
But first, I want you to basically tell us about yourself, though. Tell us about your first. Start off with your name, because maybe some people are in the, I don't know, maybe they're in the cave or somewhere else where they don't know about you. So if you can begin to tell us about yourself, that'd be great.
Okay. Back in 1978, I was a student at San Jose State. And there was 11 bills in front of legislation that was going to take away the Indian or indigenous hunting, fishing, water rights. There was 11 bills that they wanted to put into process so they could take away the reservations that Indian people lived on. So in 1978, there was about 25 of us that had organized to do the longest walk. And the longest walk started from Sacramento to Washington, D.C., and it took us 6 months to walk across this country. And at that time, I was always, like, security-minded and, you know, on security. And so I received the name on the longest walk as Warrior Woman. So that's over 30-some years now. And I started organizing when I was 15 years old. And I tell people I went through menopause in the movement. Went through puberty and everything else, you know. It's been a way of life for me. And so to me, it's just like you give the enemy no chance. You give the enemy no lead. You have to attack him right from the get-go. He is the enemy. He's been the enemy for 400, 500 years. And it's so comical because just was talking to someone, and they said, oh, 150 years that Minnesota's going to be recognized. That's the nation my husband's from. He's a Dakota Netawankitwan. They call him Sioux, but Sioux means cutthroat in French and Chippewa language, you know. So, my husband never accepted the name Sioux, so he always said he was Dakota Netawankitwan. And so if Minnesota's only recognizing it as a state, only 150 years old, how can this country go and lie to people and tell them that you know, a quincentennial, you know, lying to the people, changing numbers that they've been here 400 years, 200 years, you know? So, I you know, the white man's lie, he's always been lying. You know, he hasn't changed. And now he's bankrupt this country and turns it over to a black brother. And it's so funny because Kwame Ture, when he was alive, he would say, you know what, we didn't have anybody in power. You know, we have all these black mayors. But they give us rundown cities, and now they gave us a rundown country. You know, when Obama started running, I'm just like laugh because, you know, we've been taught and educated through this movement, through the struggle of the people, like you said, the stressful life of everyday living in oppression, you know, besides poverty and, you know, the discrimination and everything that they have. I mean, we're 2011 now, and Indian people mm-hmm. are still on reservations, but in exactly. 78 there was over 268 reservations, and in those reservations they had 75 to 90% natural resources, so they needed to get the Indians out of the way, you know. So we were educating ourselves to what does, you know, a tribe and not being called Indian, being called indigenous, being called not a reservation but a nation. And beyond sovereignty, because all the words that we're using is the enemy's language, you know, it's just like things, you know, just common things that we use, like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just hanging around. Why do we say terms like that? You know what I mean? or saying hi or hello, you know, just words that come out of our mouth that we've been programmed to, like you know, always catering to the enemy. So about over 23 years now, 22, we moved from Los Angeles into the mountains, and there's a land called Redwin, and we, through the years, up to 20 years, we've changed it, maybe in the last couple of years, to Oyate, which means the people's land. Because there are some white people that the government has used, you know, 20 years ago, and saying that they're like Cherokee princess and all this other stuff, and if they had a bloody nose, they would lose all their Indian blood, right? So now these people are in position on those reservations, you know. So real indigenous have yet to receive any funds, any royalties from these casinos. So in 78, we go back 30-some years that we marched because they were taking away the land, plus they wanted the resources, so they had to move the Indians out. So, you know, so what we did, you know, we went against the government. We walked, you know, and got there, and, you know, Carter, you know, now that he's building houses, but he wouldn't even meet with us, but he was going around the country talking about human rights, you know, and stuff like that. So we've learned through the years, and it's good when sometimes when I hear brothers and sisters, you know, say, when you see your baby, tell them reparation, you know, it's just like they have told us and how we have to continue to preserve our dignity, our culture, our language and ceremony, our way of life, you know. So to us, there's no separation within the movement and struggle and our life, you know. But the government has produced and programmed, you know, like the Willie Lynch syndrome to the indigenous people, how to make you be, you know, what is it called? You're always changing the rules, conforming, instead of just destroying the whole system. The system isn't ours. We weren't even called humans. We weren't even added in their constitution, but we're always trying to defend it. For what reason, you know? And we go inside their system, and we have to write things that we're just like them. No, we're nothing like them. We're never going to be like them, and we don't want to be like them, and we're on, you know, the left of their resources. We're like we say the indigenous people are the last stand to the resources, to their material greed, you know, because they need to kill us off before they can get their last of their resources. And they're doing that all over the country. That's why we went to North Africa back in 85 to have an indigenous conference with all indigenous people all over the world and talk about just us, because a lot of us don't even know each other, that we have the same struggle. Like I said earlier, the same dog that bit you bit us too. That's what Kali would always tell us, you know. So there's unity that has been happening within the indigenous and the black community over 30, 40 years and even beyond that. But since Kwame passed away and then working with Malik, you know, and now he's gone, we started a youth conference over 20 years ago saying that, okay, we need to still have that unity, you know. We don't have to meet each other. We don't have to marry and sleep with each other, you know. Just remember that there is a bond there with the leadership before. So we know that your leadership hopefully won't sell out to anything, you know. We hope we're on the same page. Revolution. Black power.
Well, this is really your show, Queen. This is really your show. So I guess we have one call on the line. I'm going to, of course, interview you, and I'm going to be taking questions from you because we have another call on the line that I guess is interested in asking you some questions and more about you. And I definitely want to learn as much as we can learn and definitely share your knowledge. I love talking. I feed off your energy, sister, so you keep it rolling.
Okay. Peace and love.
Hold 1 second. 314-703, you're on the air.
Black power, sisters.
Black power.
Blessings to both of you. It was very beautiful hearing you speak about the struggle that we've all been through, from the white people and things that have been taken away from us, our culture and our history, our language and our rights as human, as people, you know, our own personal land has been taken away for their gain, and us having to be here oppressed and told that we have to accept it. And it's just a very beautiful thing to see us as women and also as families coming together to educate our children and educate our community and our family to let them know that we have a right to stand up, you know, for ourselves and to regain our history and our roots and our culture and regain our land. And I just wanted to say that I support you, and it's a very, very beautiful thing, and I'm very glad that you came on and spoke about these things, and I was just very touched by your words. And I'm just listening to you. It's very powerful. And I just wanted to say a few things. Well, first, my name is True, and I'm in the St. Louis area. I'm not too far from Cahokia Mounds. I heard the sister talking about Cahokia Mounds, which is a very, very important land in this area. And I just wanted to say, as mothers of humanity, of this world and of this nation, our words and our actions are very powerful, and we have to show up right now at this time actively to lead our children and our children's children to the truth, you know, and we just have to reconnect with ourselves. So I just wanted to say those words to you.
Well, thank you, Pidamia, which means thank you in Dakota. And one thing that we have to honestly look at is why we send our children to the white man's school, you know. We give mm-hmm. them their education to be subservient, to follow their ways. I didn't send my children to the white man's school. I wanted them to learn Dakota first. That's why I went up to the mountains, to preserve ourselves, because there's too many people. The government has this COINTELPRO, you know, their sellouts, their conformists, you know, to sell us out all the time. We are sitting on the last resources that this country has. None of us people of color should be suffering at this time. We do not have the leadership to stand up, you know, straight. We're depending too much on men. It should be the women. I tell people, hey, get some women that have PMS, send them to the White House, and straighten things out quick. You know what I mean? Put everything in order. Because, you know, it's like we're the ones who give life. We're the ones that carry the child for 9 months in our womb, and then we're going to hand it over to the white man and try to give it a white man's education, and then when it turns 18, tell him go fight a war and die? For what? We don't have any of the luxury of the white people. You know, this New Year's, I send, after New Year's, I send a text to my friends, and I says, a new year, but the same struggle. We may not have the technology, and we may not have the ability to look like the white man does, you know, in his imperialistic form of raping the Mother Earth and her children and polluting and poisoning our water and putting Mia and Peltier in prison, you know. It's just, he's the same sick old thing. No matter what president is in the White House, you know, it is still, what would you say, Illuminati, Mason, whatever you want to call society. And so we have to start teaching our own in our own schools and teach them at home. The Jews do that. Don't they have after schools for their children, you know, give them two schools, you know, three. And we've got to be slick that way. And it doesn't take, I've learned through, you know, educating myself to other countries, that sometimes it just takes a handful to really take over. You have key positions and stuff like that. And you know, you don't need a whole bunch of people because people follow, you know, and sometimes they don't want to follow. Sometimes you have to just kind of hand it over. You know what I mean?
Oh, exactly.
In terms of revolution and educating and organizing people, you know. So to me, I like to slap people first in their brains, you know, to make the brain start working, you know, because the white man has nothing on us, you know. He's afraid of us, you know. If I ever travel by myself, I see white people, you know, they just, you know, and I'm like, oh, wow, I'm safe. You know what I mean? So it's just like they've always been afraid of us, and they're afraid of the truth because this land isn't theirs. That's why I couldn't believe when the trade towers, I didn't mind the trade towers going down. You know what I mean? Because a month before that, they knocked down and bulldozed the Sundance ground that the Dakota people took to the Dene people. We're sharing ceremonies, traditional ceremonies that they had given us 100 years ago, and we returned 100 years later to give them a Sundance because they're trying to relocate them and start a fight between the Hopis and the Navajo people, you know, the Dene people. So it's, you know, the war, you know, and when Obama said his acceptance speech, whatever, you know, he said they want to open federal land. Most of the land is considered federal because the United States will not accept us as being sovereign or a nation, even though they didn't include us in their constitution, and their constitution says it can never be changed. So what does that mean? You know what I mean? You know, they didn't give us the right. I mean, one time Khalid Muhammad invited me to Atlanta where they were going to discuss the, I guess it was 30 years, 60, 70, 80, something like that, that the Constitution gave the black people the right to vote, but after that they were going to think about it. I don't know. Did anybody hear? Do we still have that right? Technically? I don't know.
I guess we have 3/4 of the right.
I know. It's ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's yet for indigenous book to be written by an indigenous. It has to be a white person with maybe, you know, no Indian blood, but says they are, you know, and they run it. And that's what the reservations are now with all the casinos, was to kind of override the activists or the traditionalists, because a lot of us are supporting the traditionalists. After 78, we were all American Indian movement, but we jumped over to the elder side, you know, the ones that still know their language, still know their ceremonies, you know, because national leadership, a lot of them came out of the prison system, you know. We're happy that they brought American Indian movement, but we decided to go a step further. It's just like we're not boycotting, you know, like, what is it called, like a Tomahawk missile or something, or a Geronimo when they jump out of plane, you know, mass
dispersing,
right. You know, the Apache helicopter that kills people, you know, bombs that kill people, all
exactly.
These... You know, so that's how come we say we just want to step further, and we say, Brother Doc Khalid had done the same thing. Once you step over that line, there's no turning back, and to us, we did that step over, and we aren't turning back. We're not going to kiss ass to no white person, you know? It's like we don't even want to be around them, you know, because it's they've done too much damage, and I don't, you know, it's like I'm trying to get over that oppression of all the killing that they've done to us, and I don't think it'll take my lifetime, and so I'll never forgive them then. So that's my conclusion.
I agree. Let me ask you a question, though. Can you describe the resolution bank? And how that is, like the atmosphere, the casinos, and how they, you know what I mean, just for the listening audience.
Okay,
there's a lot of most of them have been.
Okay, in 1978, there was over 300 and some reservations, okay, or reserves or land put in trust. Okay, they found 75 to 90% natural resources on the Indian land. So when the white man came with their cavalry and with their church and with all this other stuff, you know, they, and their government and their constitution, and took the Indian land and then put the Indians on concentration camps. That's really what they were, you know. And so everybody was marked like cattle, and these reservations ended up having 75 to 90% natural resources that some of them knew 30, 100 years ago, because they had to figure a way how to eliminate the Indians, especially the elders and the people to hold on to our ceremonies. That's why a couple years ago I tattooed my face, because we have COINTEL always after us. You know, we go on the plane, they're always looking at us. Well, you know, if Warrior Woman, the name scares them, well, look at my face now. You know what I mean? If they say people of color are undocumented and illegal, well, then my face is illegal too. So anyway, going back to the 75 to 90% natural resources, that's timber, gold, uranium, water, and the government wanted it. So what it did is it put casinos on there. That's why the longest walk in 1978, even though there was a whiteout in the media putting on, saying that, you know, that they didn't even show us. But in other countries, they were showing the indigenous people walking those 6 months. And I think France was the only one that did put out a book about the longest walk. And the government was trying to figure out a way how to you know, get rid of the Indians off the reservation and put them all in Skid Row or, you know, in the homeless places, you know. So that's where the reservations came in. And my husband and his brother and some friends, elders, they decided to sue this government back in 2001. And they won in 2004. The people that were in charge of the reservation, because they're imposters, they're all white, last names, Pendleton and Prescott's and you know, white names. So anyway, they're the ones in control. So they're going on their third enrollment, you know. They have books, and there's enrollments of the families and stuff like that, and so they've eliminated some and destroyed papers and stuff like that. So we went back to Minnesota about 3 years ago to check it out, and, you know, because all reservations in this country is the same way. It's here in California. We have Schwarzenegger, who was governor, trying to get five Indian tribal chairmen to go and support him, because 10% of this casino money has been put in a trust, like Attorney General has the money underneath it. And, you know, 15, 20 years, and they haven't touched it. They want to, but they've yet to get five tribal chairmen to agree. But, you know, you'll have some people that kind of, you know, maybe, because before they try to get people who look like us, you know what I mean? But their names didn't match their looks and stuff. Now it's just outright white, you know, and stuff. So we're just, you know, through the bloodline. We say if this money ever comes through, we're going to get this, you know, DNA testing kit, you know, that we can carry with us. And when somebody says, I'm a Cherokee princess, well, then let's test it right now.
Exactly.
You know, and so put them on the line. So the reservations, the last resources that this country has, that's why it goes and fights everybody else, just like Afghanistan and with Chavez and Morales. They want their land. They want their resources, you know, and they want that greed. But none of that resources or even that money has ever come to us as a people of color. We're still, you know, living in poverty. We're still, you know, living with the oppression of being their workers. And every time we organize and get together, they throw in a wrench. You know, why else would they put Obama as president to, after how many years before that the black community was organizing people to vote? You know, because only 35% of the community voted. And so if a 30-some percent only voted, then there's 70% of us that aren't, you know, so then they had to throw somebody in to pacify us. And they do it all the time. You know, it's like throw a bone and then you'll, you know, you'll go after it and, you know, then forget about the reality. That's why I say revolution, we should know exactly what we're after. We don't want this system, you know. We don't even want to correct the system. We want it just totally gone. You know, we have to start a new one. And that's why we look at Gaddafi and his Green Book, because it's like a combination of what the communists and what United States imperialists have done, and Zionists, and then, you know, bypass it and did a third one. You know, that's why it's called the third universal theory to us, you know, and we you know, it's nice to read something that honestly breaks down every level of racism within the, you know, within the government, in your government and country and stuff like that. So the reservation was to keep us, you know, corralled. And then eventually, you know, there was a law that we couldn't even get out. I found out 2 years ago that there's a law in Minnesota that Indian people aren't supposed to even be in that state. They still have a law.
Wow.
You know, so you figure they still have that one where they, because they're the ones who brought the scalping, you know, so they brought the rape and all the injustices, and then they go throw it to say that we did it. But, you know, if we were the savage that they said we were, none of them would be alive today.
Exactly.
We outnumber them, you know, and I think that's what we shouldn't be afraid of. Our numbers outnumber them. And
sure do.
Besides having rallies and demonstrations, we've got to take it a step further, you know, is to ask for those rights and to get them then and there at the time when everybody's there, or just burn the whole damn thing up.
Go ahead.
I was just saying that, you know, that's what the flag, they said when the American flag is not worth anything, you should just fold it up and burn it, you know. So I agree when I see some of my brothers and sisters burn that flag.
Oh, I definitely do. I definitely do.
Yeah, so I think people have to wake up to how they really treat us, that we see how they really treat us, you know, because, you know, they've always fought for themselves. I mean, if they know white people, you know, if they have the last name Solomon, you know the IRS is going to give them a good job, and they may not even have the education, you know.
Exactly.
We had to learn things, you know, through the All African People's Revolution. There are people about being, what would you say, politically correct? And I said, I don't want to be politically correct, because they keep telling you we're, you know, the white man, that we're savages and heathen and all this. Okay, well, then I'm going to continue to be that way. I can't stand you. Get out of my face. You know what I mean? It's like our homeboys should turn around and go after the real enemy, you know, not each other. And that's what they're doing. And so we have to educate them any way we can. And until we can get mass media, mass literature, you know, that'll actually have an organization or group that actually feeds our people, clothes our people, and have our own clothing, our own, you know what I mean? Unless we have that, then we're just armchair or talking revolutionary people that, you know, aren't doing anything.
Well, let me ask you something, a twofold question, and one being, could you break down the AIM organization and what your opinion is about that, and also could you, in dealing with that question, could you tell us more about Leonard Peltier?
Leonard Peltier has been used as a scapegoat, because back in Wounded Knee, 73, two FBI agents were killed. And when they were killed, they couldn't find out who killed them. And they're mad because here Indian people don't have the what would you say, the weaponry as FBI and the government. And, you know, they were always like the cowboys, right? That's why I say before it was cowboy and Indians. Now it's Zionists and indigenous. You know, we're still the same, still white people. So anyway, Peltier, they accused of killing those FBI agents. There's no evidence. There's no witness. There's people that had testified that have said that they didn't, you know. And, you know, and he's doing 30-some years now in prison. And so we have been asking supporters of the international supporters to pull us out of this country so we can talk to other country members, because we've yet to get out of this country so we can open international, you know, connections again and let them know that Peltier needs to get out. If the casinos are on sovereign land and Peltier is a prisoner of war, then what is he doing in the white man's prison? You know, it's just like the Panther brothers that they got out here in Oakland. Why, after they're 67 years old, they're going after the brothers? You know what I mean? That is ridiculous, you know. You know, they were racist then, they're racist today, you know. It's just like you said, don't give them a break, you know. So anyway, that's why they want health care. We killed two of theirs, and they only got one of ours, so they're mad because we did a better job with what little we had.
Exactly.
Just that Peltier didn't do that. He's a scapegoat, and we honor him for spending the time, but we're trying to help him to get out.
I want to do a plug for him too. They have a book that I purchased about a year ago. It's called Prison Writing. My life. To my mess, to I'm trying to think. I can't even see. I need to get my glasses. My life is my badge. So Sundance. So that would definitely be a good book. It's basically his prison writings. It's kind of like what most of us know to be book that Field Marshal George Jackson wrote, Soul Dad Brothers. It's kind of similar to that. It's really, really interesting. And I read that, so I would definitely want people to definitely purchase that. And along with COINTELPRO Papers, because it talks about documents on wars against our people, you know, and it breaks down about how what they did to the AIM organization, and it broke down what they did to, of course, many other organizations existing. So we definitely have another caller, but I don't – oh, yes, could you please break down the AIM organization, because I know a lot of people may not know about that.
Back in the 60s, they started an organization, American Indian Movement, that – the elders have a saying that it was before 1968 or 69, because it started when the white people first got here. That's when American Indian Movement started. But they were killing. There was like over 400 deaths. That was one of the things that when we did the longest walk, the statistics of the people killed on the one Pine Ridge Reservation is almost like Watts, you know, how we live in oppression and stuff like that. Those are two similar countries. To states, you know, that the government has us, you know, in kind of like a prison system type. And so they organized because they had got this brother, and I don't know, it's just like all the other racist things that they do. They make them dance, and later on they go and kill them in one of their secret ceremony clubs and stuff. And they had killed Indian people when they drink, and they got drunk, and they'd pass out, and the white men would come and beat them to death while they're passed out. So a lot of things were happening like that. And so AIM went down there because, and I don't know if you've seen those old pictures where this one woman, she'd been dragged out of the courthouse, and her bra showing and everything like that, her clothes are all torn because, you know, so the people from the city, you know, which didn't relate to the city people anyway, so they went back, and a lot of people were going back home, trying to go back to their indigenous way. And this, it was a beginning, you know, like our exodus, you know, back in the 60s. It was like the Black Panthers and the weaponry and to defend ourselves. But, you know, 78, 79, the longest walk, 78 on 90 Big Mountain. So it's continuing. But they have this whiteout on the media where it will not put down exactly what they're doing. So they're still trying to have the elders die out, so the young ones already acculturated and assimilated into the white man's educational system and society. So they are not going to want to come back home and herd sheep, plant corn. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so, so, you know, they want to live in the white man's world. But going to Libya and seeing how they live in their technology world and tradition, we still can do it. So, you know, anything
what,
they
you
do.
Break, go ahead.
So break down what?
Could you break down what you mean by indigenous? Because some people may not mean exactly what that means. And, you know, and on the terms of what you prefer, what the red woman would prefer to be called, because a lot of times, you know, we may, people may utilize the so-called white man's way of way they say, you know, so we want to know.
Well, when we went to North Africa, we were trying to, as a group, because some people, we say in the United States, sovereignty, and in Chiapas and in, you know, South America, they say autonomous, you know, and it's all their language. It's Spanish here, it's English here. And Castilian, and then in Canada, they don't like using Aboriginal, you know, so the elders have just come to the conclusion that they just want to be called by their traditional name. So it's Mdewakanton, Dakota, and whatever nation you're talking to, it's a different nation. So, you know, to put it out, it's like it depends on which organization you're working with.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. We definitely need to know that. But we do have a caller. I guess one person wants to come in and rep and ask you a couple few questions. We have 214-672. You're on the air, Black Power. Wait a minute, let me get this going on. This is my third show, Queen, so I'm not a veteran just yet. Black Power.
Queen, how you doing?
Doing great.
We're doing fine, Black Power.
Great. This is indeed a blessing as well as a privilege and an honor to see two of the most fierce women in the world share a platform and come with a common denominator to Wonder Warrior Woman, how? To our sister, Black Power. This is the Supreme Captain of the new Black Panther Party, Hakeem Muhammad. I would like to share some inspirational thoughts because I find myself being very emotionally inclined at this time. I said that to say this. I'm calling you from the dirty South here in Dallas, Texas, where we are the headquarters. You sisters have really stirred some emotions with me tonight. Let me kind of just go slow and expound and elaborate on what I'm saying. In 1972, I was put out of the Dallas school system. I'm calling you from Dallas, Texas. I was put out of the Dallas school system on the strength that the educational books that were written by this white man. He said that Christopher Columbus discovered America. I questioned the teacher that how could Christopher Columbus discover America and the Indians were standing there at Plymouth Rock? And the sister, the teacher told me, she said, well, this would mean that he will be a first. I said, he couldn't have been first because the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that the Indians were here 1,400 years before Christopher Columbus got here. Now, if those people are standing here and they greeted him to come here, this is not correct. I was taken to the principal's office and expelled from the Dallas school system. Okay, after studying the history of the Indians and finding out that the government removed them from Florida, they traveled all the way back, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, into Texas. And when they got to Texas, they cut straight up and went into Canada. Okay. I've had a chance in the 70s to travel to Seattle, Washington, on a reservation where they had a powwow. I also sit down and discuss this. And the same issue that you two fiery sisters discussing tonight, I discussed with some chiefs. And they told me that it's true. So I'm really impressed. I'm very impressed with you two sisters. In the Quran, as a Muslim, it teaches us that if you teach a man, you teach an individual. But if you teach a woman, you teach a village. So it's great to see that you sisters are sharing a platform together, coming with the common denominator that there's oppression among people of color. Warrior Woman, I really admire you, sister. The average sister won't walk across the street, and look how far you walk. It's a blessing as well as a privilege to see a sister like yourself to invoke the name of the Black Power General, Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, as your brother, and he supported you 100%. It would be a blessing to see you two sisters being a role model for the rest of the sisters in the world to look up to you and to have the understanding that you have, because the sisters today are in need of positive role model. I'm not saying all sisters, but here in Dallas, Texas, we see our people are falling prey to the white regime. The government here supports this city and being the second, I believe, largest city in the United States where immortality rate is like the second time a woman have a baby without a father. If we would see more sisters like you in the street today doing what you're doing, being on this platform discussing the history of our ancestralship between the blacks and the Indians. The Taos Indians here respects us. We respect them. But this platform, it needs to be taken to a broader agenda, and this needs to be brought to everybody's attention, that the same dog bit the Indians, also bit the black people too. So you, sisters, keep doing what you're doing. As your Supreme Captain of the New Black Panther Party, I support you 101%. Sister, warrior woman, you are definitely a woman of God. I've had a chance in the prison system to deal with the Indians by having a chance to go into the sweat lodge and doing dialogues with them. They have no love for this goddamn white man. Oops, excuse my friend. They have no love for the white man. Neither do I. And to see two sisters like this teaching this kind of form, it would be a blessing to support you sisters to go on in your struggle to teach and to preach this to the sisters, because what you're saying needs to be heard. How? And black power.
Black power. Keep them up.
Black power, brother. We really appreciate you. That brother's something else.
Yeah.
But,
I said
really
it makes sense them. Because, you know, the white man, he's always trying to write our history, you know, and always trying to say that, you know, 1492, you know, or 1607, and there was a connection between us and the black community way before then. And also, we've talked to some of the traditional elders in Mexico with the Masawa Nation, and they said that they had traveled before the white man put the borders there all the way to Alaska and Canada and places. So there was really no separation. He has separated us. We tell people, when you have your heart and your mind and your voice all connected, you know, then there's that truth, you know, and we need to tell the truth to our children so that they won't forget and fall for the enemy. We have to you know, to me, it's an honor when I can, you know, sit and hear an elder speak in his own language and, you know, and teach us something, you know, because there's, you know, we've been, our brains have been taken away. And we said, you know, even we live up on 240 acres of land in the middle of California. We have our youth conference every 20 years, you know, so people of color come, you know, so we can have a place that we know there's no white people here. One tries to sneak in, we throw them out, you know. But, you know, we need to show how we are beautiful in our own way. You know what I mean? We don't even have to buy the clothing from the white man, you know. You know, why are we ashamed of who we are and what we are, you know? But then we got to spend a lifetime just fighting that, you know, and how many generations did it take for them to get us to where we're at in this state of mind of denial of who we are, you know? So to us, we'd rather die fighting as warriors, you know, because we said that if our elders are all gone, then what is it worth living? Because all of the other ones are fake and want to be and trying to be and never will be, and we can't follow a lie, you know, because then the lie we tell our children, then that lie keeps going, you know, and that's why it says if we have a 10-point plan, if we have our agenda of what our revolution is, you know, it doesn't include the white people. They got to go back to where they're from, and if they don't know, well, they don't belong here, and their national geographic and their, you know, everything that they ride, digging up our bones and stuff, they're not going to find themselves here, you know. So I think it's so important that we have the truth and tell the truth, you know, but we can't use their greed. Because once what we've noticed amongst our own people that are coming back home is they have this arrogant attitude, you know what I mean? It's just like a white man. Oh, he's got his 4 years, his 6 years of education, so now he's got a degree and now he thinks he's somebody. No. The more you learn in a traditional way, the more humble you are, the more respectful you are, because we can't make it rain. We don't make the air we breathe. We don't make the Mother Earth. You know how weak and pitiful the two-legged are. So it's like that's how we come home, you know, to understand that we got to start taking everything the white man gave us in our brain. You know, it wasn't here before. You know, we have to start going back in that way. So I think it's important that we do get together. I mean, like I said, Libya opened their country so we could have a conference there, an indigenous conference back in 85 before they bombed their country. The United States bombed their country, and then they were forced relocation at Big Mountain. So we were inside Big Mountain at the time, you know, that they were bombed. So And Kwame Ture was the one that had invited us to that country when they had put the ban on it, that you couldn't go there. I think we should start making our own passports and license plates. I mean, we belong to a nation, and it's not this one. It's not the United States.
Really, for real?
Yeah.
That does sound like something we should do. But I have a caller or person in the chat room that has a question for you. He asked me to ask you about the suicide and the so-called gang problems on the reservation.
The FBI? No. What gang? No. Yes, we have the alcohol problem has been there for a long time. Like I told you, I went 3 years back to Minnesota, and on that reservation, the tribal police son was selling the meth, was selling the drugs on the reservation, and the grocery store was where they were selling it out of. I was there a month, and I already knew who the drug dealers were. And it's just like, oh, well, they're related with so-and-so, and they're, you know, but it's still killing our people. What happened is an elder, when I was at San Jose State, she had told me that the white man had offered the indigenous alcohol and got him hooked on it. And then he had, you know, first it was free, then he had to pay for it and figure out, you know, that's how he can give up all his, what he's, you know, worth, his land and stuff. So back in 78, there was, I don't know, how many percent of babies were born with alcohol syndrome, you know, how many deaths happened with the indigenous babies that were, when people party, they put all their babies on one bed, and then somebody would pass out on them, and then they suffocate the baby. There's a lot of that. And also because there wasn't money to buy alcohol and stuff like that. There was like four-year-old babies that would go and inhale the gas exhaust from cars. So there's a big percentage of our babies. But the United States, that's part of its game. I don't know if you've heard when Che Guevara says it's better to kill a gorilla in the womb of the woman than to kill him in the mountains. Well, that's exactly what the government did here. It sterilized like over 52% Indian women, 46% Indian men back in the 70s. You know, that was in the 60s and 70s during the AIM time. And when Clinton was president, Hillary Clinton was in charge of the health department, and she was even talks about that. Well, she okayed AIDS virus inside the baby shots, telling the mothers that at that time that they couldn't get welfare and food stamps or whatever unless their baby got a baby shot when they were born and stuff, and they were injected with the virus of AIDS. And that was after 1978, because, you know, the government doesn't really know the nations as it thinks that it does, you know, by saying Dakota, Lakota. Those are two different nations. And in the Lakota, Dakota, Oglala, there's like over seven bands in the nation, you know. There's seven different groups. And so, so that's why, the alcohol, drugs, sterilization, anything and everything to get rid of us. You know, and we laugh and we say we're still here. You know what I mean? Even if we have to hide our babies and, you know, and not send them to their school and hopefully, you know, they'll help the future, if there's going to be a future. Because after the white buffalo calf was born, then it was for, they're projecting the end of the world, just like how Elijah had visited Thomas Pinata, one of the elders, and he had said that, you know, about the tornadoes and earthquakes and the purification of the Mother Earth. 1978, they said that we're over halfway through purification, because we were learning from the elders on those 6 months. And so, and now we're way over that, you know, of purification, which is the end of the world. So people, you know, if they're going to be praying, they better start praying now. You know what I mean? They should have prayed.
Right.
Yet. No, that's what we're saying. People want to go into, they give their drugs, but they're hooked on drugs, and they use that same mentality that they have inside their church or wherever they pray, you know. And so they're not doing anything. They're just substituting the high, you know. But they're not getting down to the reality. The earth, without the earth, without the air, without the water, we as human, because I hate the term human, which means animal-like, we as a people cannot exist. you know, because they have, and I keep saying they have a language for us to speak, so they know how to control us, and they have the white man's British, you know, economic universities that they go to so that they have their own language, you know. And me being away from them for like 20 years and I attend a city council meeting, it's like, you know, these white people look albino and they, you know, they're speaking another language. You know what I mean? Anyway, back to the, yeah, there's a lot of alcoholism and a lot of drugs and a lot of sterilization to get rid. I mean, they've always been trying to kill us, you know, and they haven't succeeded, you know, and we pray for purification. You know, we pray for revolution or evolution, whichever comes first.
Yes, that's real interesting. I got some more questions for you. People are really hitting me up with questions. Let me try to read this as best as I can to see how they put it. What are your people been through during the past years of the struggle? I guess that's what they, yeah. They worded it a little bit differently, but I'm trying to word as best as I can. I didn't understand how they put it before.
Okay. The last 20 years, we separated ourselves from the white man's world, I mean, as much as we can. And we moved up to the mountains and trying to preserve our integrity, our way of life, our ceremonies, our songs. Like I told you, we did the lawsuit. You know, it's still going into, it goes to court again on the 21st since 02. But we went to land claims because we couldn't keep going to the police department on the reservation, the tribal police, because they'd beat us up because the tribal chairman, who's white, tells them to beat us up. So we went around them and went to land claim where they said they had put land in trust 100 years ago. So if a land was in trust, isn't there a bank account? So we brought that to them. And so, you know, we figured when we won, oh, no, they probably run out of money. Sure enough, they did. So anyway... you know, that we support the Palestinian people. We support the people that this country is bombing because, you know, what right does this country have to, you know, it's a thief, you know. Imperialists, Zionists are just thieves, and they want to steal the resources on everybody's land. Lately, I just been on the radio station in, like you said, Texas, back in Florida, Louisiana, and, you know, because there's few of us, you know, we try to do things like with the minister, with Sarah Khan, the Million Family Marcher, the Million Men Marcher, and stuff like that. Like I said, I want to start international traveling to bring up about the health care again, kind of, you know, bring it up. Because there's a lot of information that there was, like, informers and people that... you know, but I don't know if you knew who Dennis Banks was. He was part of American Indian Movement. He was married to a woman named Kamook. Kamook is the one who's still testifying against Peltier, saying he did kill the FBI. She wasn't even, she must have been 12 years old at the time. You know what I mean? And her baby is now 20-some years old and led the second longest walk. You know what I mean? You know, we out here in California know each other, you know, and we're like, hey, where did this come out of? You know, people can't come in to our community and decide to do like a big old rock concert without the permission of the people that are in the streets, you know. And so, you know, we let people know, hey, you know, if they want to work with pigs, that's okay, but I don't want to work with them. You know, now I think they're going to do a third longest walk on diabetes.
Wow.
Why don't they go and do a walk against a white man who gives you the damn stuff that you eat that makes you into a diabetic?
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Generations of diabetics, you know. And even when you go to a welfare place, you know, they used to have candy machines in there. So what kind of stuff is that? You know, I mean, the white man.
No, apple food machines. Candy,
you know?
And pop, soda pop.
You know, we have ceremonies here that people come, there's weddings, Indian ceremonies, and, you know, and maybe 4 months before they have their ceremony, you know, for them to actually have the wedding part, because they have to go in through the ceremony, which represents a sweat lodge and things like that. On the land, it's just constant, you know, taking care of the land, you know, and keeping it intact without any income coming in, you know, and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things, you know. You know, we're working on that immigration against people of color being stopped and, you know.
Driving white color.
Yeah.
Right. Or walking white color, too. They harass you for walking. You can't walk. You can't drive. You know what I mean? You just doomed, you know. I have a person in the chat room. They're asking, do you do speaking engagements?
What?
Do you do speaking engagements?
Oh, yeah. We're planning one to Europe. I've never really talked in a white community, you know, and I'm hoping people of color are over there. We're just saying as a joke, you know, when we go over there, we're going to ask those white people if they can come and get their other white people and get them out of here. All they do is kill. You know, I'm very destructive.
But like, as far as over here, like, across country, like, for example, let's see, I have to. Okay, yeah, but for, they want to know as far as different areas, like, for example, like, would you come to Kentucky or St. Louis or D.C. or places like that for your brothers and our brothers and sisters that would like for you to come down? What will it take? Because they're asking about in the chat room. Well, Chicago.
Oh.
I'm sorry, the brothers in Chicago.
Well, Chairman Malik and those guys always are in contact with me. You know, you can just let me know what it is, but I don't hold back on anything. You know what I mean? If they're going to, I ask people, if you want me, I'm going to be speaking the truth. And I'm against the brothers. One time, I guess, Khalid was saying something about the faggots. And somebody was talking about the history of the ships that came out here and how they got destroyed. One ship, you know how they talk about the three ships, the Santa Maria and all
right.
the other ones, you know, and that one got eaten up by maggots. And I said, that's all they brought was faggots and maggots, you know. You know, but I thought it was, I mean, you know, what have they honestly brought that they didn't steal the idea from us, you know? And that's how come I said, what are we so afraid? They just try to make us afraid of them for what? You know, they're killing us in a slow death, drugs, slow death with their education, a slow death. Well, you know, if I'm going to be slowly dying, you know, I can pick the way I want. You know what I mean? And that's the thing we said here at the land. You know, if no money comes in, well, no money comes in, you know. So we'll just see how it goes. And, you know, we you know, pray in our ceremonies to be with the Creator. So we're, you know, we'll get there faster.
Exactly. But, yeah, he wants to know, he would like for you to give out your contact. Well, I would like that as well. For people to be able to contact you, because they might really want to, you know, work with you outside, not just members of the New Black Panther Party, but we have different people in the radio chat room that really want, they seem really interested in what you're talking about, and they really want to connect with you. So if you can give
sure,
out
yeah, I have an email. It's warriorwoman74@yahoo. It's comical because I have a email that's Oyate7Nation, somehow I've had it for a year and I can't get into my email. So, you know, with technology, I'm not, you know, phone, whatever, you know.
It's okay, shoot. A lot of, yeah, technology is something else that's changing each day. So, you know, they're already ahead of us on that. So we're the ones behind. So,
yeah.
They have a whole new system. They just haven't released yet, you know.
I was thinking,
but yeah, they go ahead. I'm sorry.
How they have their cameras? How they brought their cameras and their equipment? Do you know what I mean? Over here, and we didn't have things like that. So it's like their technology is like was way ahead of time in that sense. But
exactly.
We were already traveling without planes.
Exactly.
You know. So, So it's like, I'd be honored. I'd be honored to go wherever the struggle is. Kwame would always say, ready for the revolution.
We would definitely, we're going to definitely have people that really want to work with you. I'm so glad that you came on tonight because I really got a chance to really talk to you on here and just ask some questions that, you know, people have. I have some more. Let me see if any lines are open. Let me see if anybody else has called in new. No, they have not, but they're asking questions in the chat room. I have another question. What problems did you encounter, and how did you understand them? What problems did you encounter, and how did you understand them? I guess in organizing. I guess what they're trying to say, what problems did you understand? What problems did you have in organizing?
Well, when I started at 15 years old, and I started a Brown Beret chapter, and they arrested all of us, and the town was too small, so they had a dog pound truck pick us all the youth up in a dog pound truck. There were some students that ran into a church thinking that they have safety there, and the police went in there and took them. So I learned by experience, you know. So I was never in a role to you know, for leadership because it just wasn't my thing, you know. But I ended up in that role. Right now I feel like, you know, people I meet and I travel with, you know, are on a platform or on stage and stuff, and then they're gone. I mean, I really felt weird when I was in, I think it was in Washington in Harvard or some, what's that university? They had a picture of Kwame Ture on one of the posters, you know. It's just like he used to be on stage with us, and then I see him on a poster, you know. It was something else, but mostly through experience of wanting to know how come our people are oppressed, why our people are living in poverty, why, you know, and then understanding all the resources that's underneath the land and how people are relocated. Like in from Mexico, they're relocated off their land so that the government can steal the natural resources, and then they come down this way. Then people are racist towards them because they're trying to find a better way. And in between, all we see is what the white man shows us is the drug pushers, the dealers, and even though the guns and the drugs are coming from the United States, I mean, they're the ones who transport it. That's what the whole thing during the Vietnam War was. They were bringing in marijuana and drugs through their body bags of their dead, you know. We saw videotapes of the United States Army men in Vietnam would put a hand grenade in the Vietnamese woman's uterus and watch her head pop. You know what I mean?
Right.
Also use their uterus for a headband, just like the cowboys were, you know, what was his name? Yeah, you know, so... So their technology or their way they've done things has always been the same. You know, they're sick, they're perverted, and they turn our people just like them. You know, so just learning and traveling and knowing that there's other countries, you know, of our people that are in control, you know, and over 30-some years, Cuba, you know, over 30-some years, Libya. So there's examples of countries. You know, where the 60s, you know, they brought in the drugs, they brought in COINTELPRO, you know, the white leaders. And even this time when the first demonstration in California happened, the white people didn't have anybody in color in L.A. speaking. So I told them, you go and you take over the mic. You know, these white kids are the children of these white people, and you're letting them control you? No. You know, those white people have to sit back, you know, and shut up and just do work, you know. They have no right in any decision-making or anything within our struggle. So living on the land, and I've seen how they've flown helicopters above us and shooting at us with blanks, you know. We tell people, stay here a week or two, then you'll see, you know, them flying over and flying so low. And they did that in Chiapas. And because of the house aren't that well structured, the building flew off, the top of the roof fell out and amputated a little kid, you know. And so here's some people from San Francisco stayed here, and they saw it. And I had gone to Chiapas because when Kwame Ture passed away, I get into these trips how people want you to be here, you know. And, you know, I'm not a showpiece. You know what I mean? And okay. And travel with my husband. It's not just him talking. We both talk, you know. And sometimes people think they can get both of us for the price of one. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to go. I didn't want to. I didn't want to go. So I took off to Mexico so nobody could find me. But there was a lot of articles on Kwame Ture, you know, and there's the same struggle is everywhere. When they talk about free trade, it's not free. It's free for them because they take it. You know what I mean? And to understand how economics
steal it.
And
yeah, they steal it, murder it, and blood it. Any
yeah.
way that they can get it, they will get it.
Yeah. So I had the chance to go to Palestine in terms, but it was on the other side, you know, because I always feel like a warrior, you know, get as close to the enemy as you can. And so I went. And here on TV, they're showing SWAT teams going into the Palestinian people's homes and, you know, and how they produce fake leadership. Because when we were at the time back in, I think it was in the 80s, we were going to Libya, and there was another group. They said they were Indians, but they were going to see Arafat or they were seeing Saddam Hussein or something like that.
I know,
and I'm
that's
like,
what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, and they send these fake people, you know, and it's so sad because there's a lot of people that love the indigenous people, you know, and they open up their homes and hearts, and you get these fake ones, and who knows what they're up to, which is no good, really. Now, when I saw that, I'm like, whoa, you know, there's another world. There's one person that they had already, were already programming him to take over another country's president. You know, they were already, like, setting him up. And I'm like, they're organized. We have to be organized. The enemy is organized, and they got the money to be organized, you know, but we got the numbers. We outnumber
exactly.
them. You know?
Yeah, we have to get together, shoot, because this
right.
is like,
yeah.
it's not going away. It's not going away. It's only getting worse. And they can
yeah.
say that through the civil rights that, you know, they won, we won in the civil rights. I don't think so. I know that. I know that we still have oppression. I mean, it's worse. You know what I mean? They have a whole system design. They had a whole system design in the 50s and the same exact, and really before then, in 1800s. The same system that they had for us in the 1800s, they still are utilizing to this day. And it's like, it's just, and they're so dumb because it's the same exact effect, but we're just not seeing it. Even we're not reading them online. I mean, it happened with Katrina, you know what I mean? And it's like, you would think, you know, we don't call it Hurricane Katrina, we call it Hurricane America. Because they did it, you know what I mean? America did it. Same way with the world trade and all these different things and all the assassination of our leaders. You know what I mean? I remember when I was looking about Khaled, and Dr. Khaled he was on trial when he had, at the time he had gotten shot, the Honorable Dr. Khaled Muhammad. And basically he was saying, they said, well, who shot you? He said, y'all shot me. You know what I mean? And I understand that. I understand that it doesn't matter whether it was a black hand or a red hand, but it was the same system. It was the system's hand. So the system is to be held responsible. Go ahead.
I was saying, usually it's our own people that they send to get us. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So
because they can't get in that easily. They can, but not as easy. Not as easy. Like I was talking about that one warrior that was on Cahokia Mounds, because he was in the book, a bar on Cahokia Mounds. They had like some type of a bar, and he was in there drinking. And he didn't want to work with the pale face at all. He was totally against it, but they sent one of his people in to kill him. But let's see. I have some more questions, I guess. Let me try to read this as best as I can, because, again, it's, you know, I didn't write it, so they're asking, okay, basically, who impacted your life? What leader that really inspired you?
There was this man called Antonio de Bono, and he rode with Pancho Villa when he was 16 years old. So we were organizing for low-income food for the community, and he would sit and talk to us about how the white man, all he understands is money. So the only way you can really hurt him is through the pocketbook. You know, he would say, you got to grab him by the testicles, but he would say balls, you know, and in the pocketbook. And that's how you attack, you know, and, you know, you know, until Tears time in his prison, you know, and, you know, Crazy Horse and, you know, Little Crow. Little Crow was Longwalker's great uncle that they took to Washington, you know, and stuff. They're always trying to convert him, you know, and, you know, they end up killing him, saying that he was taking some food from some land. But, you know, it's like they take you to Washington, take your picture, then when you go back home, they try to kill you, you know. So it's like, it's, you know, mostly revolutionary people. My leaders, our teachers have all been revolutionaries. And all of them have died within the struggle. Thomas Banyaka, who was the elder that would talk about the prophecy of the Hopis and stuff like that, you know, he would travel and he had to go to jail because he wouldn't go to war, you know, during World War II. And he would travel with just a leather and a feather in it and say that's his passport, you know. So, you know, there's, you know, and I'm hoping there'll be new ones, you know.
I'm hoping so, too. I really am. Oh,
you know,
go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Go.
We do have another caller. I guess it's 901-846. Black Power, you're on the air.
Black Power, Queens. So glad to hear this conversation before I went ahead and went to sleep. Came across this right here, and it's very empowering. I'm surprised there's not more users on here. But the reason why I'm calling is because exactly like the Queen said, you know, the brother that she admired, he said that you have to know exactly how to tear down the Caucasian, and that is through their financial system, because everything that they do is based upon finances. Slavery, when you look at it, when they said it was abolished through the Emancipation Proclamation, it wasn't because they had a good conscience that this was the wrong thing to do. It was basically essentially because the South was basically outgrowing the North. And so it was all about money. It was about the balance of power. And if you research history, you'll see that the only reason why the South did not win was because of our Russia at that time threatened Europe with war and said that the same central banking system that you tried to apply in my country, if you attempt to do it in the United States of America, it's an act of war. So the thing about it is that we have to realize that as masters of everything and anything, the beginning, the end, the alpha and the omega, we must learn, first of all, their educational system. And we have to know that their educational system is just fragmentation of our educational system. And we come together and we put all that together, and that's how we conquer. Because divided, which is what we've been done throughout history, every nationality has been divided. Look at the Indians. Look at the Indians, how they were put on reservations after they almost died out and on their own land, you know, and put on reservations as a means to protect them from extinction through disease and all these other kind of things that was done to them because they did not go ahead and agree with Christianity. So if we can take one lesson, Take this lesson right here that all history is ours. It's just fragmented. Sisters and brothers of brown skin, Mexicans of brown skin, those are our brothers and sisters. When you look at the history of those lands, you'll go ahead and you'll see information that's prevalent in Kemet or Egypt. That same African history has been transported all around the world. Egypt was our Washington, D.C. But we as melanated people, we rule the earth. And so my thing is I would implore anyone out there that's listening to research House Joint Resolution 192 of the 73rd Congress. And that right there is your remedy, because you can't use a debt instrument to pay debt. Ever since 1933, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt filed for bankruptcy, they did away with the gold and silver standard, and everything that we do with a debt instrument is illegal. Hit them in their pocket. Hold tap.
Hold tap, brother.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Go ahead.
We at the same time. You know, about the natural resources underneath the Mother Earth, you know, we were planning, because other countries have opened up to help us as indigenous people in the struggle, you know, but there's always some interference and stuff, you know, because, you know, the how you can go to the North Atlantic closer to other countries, and other countries, well, there's some of our indigenous people that live in those little borders, you know, and it'd be easy to travel out of here, you know, for the resources that we have. Because right now the government is, it wants to take it. That's why it's so being so nice to some of the indigenous people that have been struggling for 20 and 30 years, you know, for back pay, for money that they owe them. And, you know, they want the resources because this country is broke, you know, even with the silver and stuff that they talk about. I mean, their whole country was set up illegal. Someone was just talking about how they have the, what is it called, the government and state, the state and church, how they divided it so that they can steal on both sides.
Oh, right.
So it, they've been alive, they've been thieves, and, you know, I think, you know, if we want to, what would you say, not exploit, but to use our own resources on our own land, you know, we have the technology and we have the education, so why don't we use it? What's holding us back? You know, we brought this out, you know, to the black community over 30-some years ago. There was a lot of 99-year-old lease that were going up. So, you know, with Redwin, and because there will be no casino, nobody with their casino money is going to finance us as revolutionary people. We are the dog soldiers. We are the last of the last of the fighters because, you know, we're not putting up with the government. We've never taken anything from the government, and we don't want anything from the government. The resources and all the money that is underneath these reservations. That's why we said when we won back in 2001, only states around Minnesota, you know, that knew. It didn't even get all the way to California. When we went and the United States bombed Libya, they only came into Washington, New York. It didn't even go to Texas, California. So we know the white out that they have, you know, with their media and their technology. They're not going to tell you that other countries support the oppression. You know, the countries didn't bomb, or if they did bomb, you know, they didn't bomb any neighborhood. You know what I mean? So as revolutionary people, you know, we have to wake up to the reality. All the resources is still underneath the indigenous land. But even besides that, you know, there's still some percentage of casino money inside the Attorney General's office, you know, and then all the 100-year-old back pay that they owe us, you know. I mean, and then, you know, because they oppress us and they kill us and they sterilize us and they take our land and they poison us through their food and their alcohol and their drugs. You know, they owe us more. You know what I mean? When the brother was saying, right, could you speak on reparations? And I said, yes, but they owe us more than that money because of all the people they've killed. They can never repay us. They can never repay what they've done, you know. And I think that's the kind of strength that we have to have, that if somebody does something to my baby, you know, they better be running fast, you know, because, you know. And I think it's important that we do have discussions like this because, you know, we hope that there is some time left that we can get together. You know, I invite everybody to our youth conference in April, the 15th through the 17th. Every year we have one in April because it's going to be close to ALD in May. And, you know, we have Brother Chairman Malik Zulu Shabazz going to be here, and also Fred Hampton Jr., Chairman Fred, and also three chapters of the Brown Berets and Chief Bong Walker. And I hope that we could get to some kind of conclusion, you know. If not, then like when this money does come in, you know, we'll finance, we say, our own revolution, since we're financing it now anyway.
Exactly. But, okay, I have a few more questions, of course. Questions keep coming. And you kind of asked this, but answered it a little bit, but I guess this person wants you to go more into detail in regards to what is the relationship between the red people and the black people on the terms of reparations.
I think they owe us more than what they have. I mean, you know what I mean? But what I talked a couple years back at UCLA, and they were already, the government was already picking out organizations who they were going to give this money out to. You know, so I'm like, whoa, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think everybody should be hip that if this money comes, you know, who is it going to go to? You know, like I said, they owe so much, you know. I think it's all right.
Okay. One second. Let me find out because somebody just told me the sound is kind of bad.
Oh. Okay.
All right. Let me find out if they are able to hear. Okay. All righty. Let me make sure. It's just now. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead. We're not going to wait on that, but I just want to make sure because I'm getting a couple of hits and people are saying that the sound is going a little bad like it was before. I had tremendous struggle in trying to get in to this. But, yeah, I've worked with Chairman Fred Jr. as well, and he trained me a bit. So I definitely know him. He's a good warrior. Good warrior, I must admit that. I'm trying to think. What else? Let me read this. I gotta read some more questions. I guess we have here. How do you encourage others in the organization to communicate and speak the truth?
Well, they have to know the truth that this land does not belong to the white people. Their constitution is illegal. So how could they say anybody is illegal? You know, or undocumented. Does anybody have documents saying that these white people can come and have this land? I mean, who in their right mind thinks that Manhattan was given for a little sack of beads if the Indian people didn't know their language, you know? It's ridiculous, you know? If they lied and they continue to lie, and I think when people realize that this is a lifetime struggle for us that are awake and conscious and trying to educate other people, and sometimes, you know, we have to kind of just be outright, you know, because the technology that we have, and we can't even really, you know, they mess it up all the time, you know, like you couldn't get a hold of you or the static, you know, you think, oh, the society is so high-tech, but it is not. If it is, then why do the government always stick a wrench in it, or, you know, that shouldn't happen in a country. This country, the more I study or look how free it says it is, it's not. You know, we don't have the freedom of speech. Look what they did to Doc, and they said he couldn't speak anywhere in this country, you know, but then who right, you know, they don't have the right to tell us that we can't speak, and that's what I tell them. The government, it does not control the indigenous people, you know, and we have to stand up, just like they tell us, you know, if we ever look at the point of human, you don't see anything out there saying human unless it's a humane society, and that's for the animals. And as long as we say we're humans, we're animal-like, then we're out here telling them, you know what I mean? That's where they want to keep it. They call themselves he and she or the people or the populace, you know? So the language controls us, you know, by them. You know, that's how come I don't want to be near them.
Yeah, I agree with you. They asked, the same person asked another question. They wrote it a bit differently. So I'm trying to, okay. You touched on this a little bit, but I guess they need you to go more into detail. They want to know, do you have any more comments for the youth with that or within the struggle and that are thinking about being in a struggle, what would be your advice to them? How would you tell them to, I guess, roll, or how would they make more of an impact? Because, again, you know how they say that we're passing the torch on, or we're, keeping up traditions, you know, within our nations, but at the same time, you know, we still want our, I guess, the people that, our brothers and sisters that are coming in to, I guess I hate to say the light, but they're coming into a greater understanding. They want to continue on, and they want to work with us hand in hand as well. But how would they upgrade? I mean, what would be your advice on that?
Well, when I was organizing or just starting off to organize, the elder that was helping me along was 79 years old, and he said that there might be change in my children's lifetime, you know. So they already foresaw, you know, the change, some kind of change, you know. So, you know, we shouldn't be in a hurry, you know. Prophecy says that in the seventh generation, it is that time right now that they need to decide if they're going to go towards the white man's way or who they are, you know. And so the young people need, because they live in that technology world, and some of them live there and live here, so they got both worlds. So I think if they study, but also understand that, you know, the words that they learn should be from our own, you know, our own people that are in the movement, in the struggle, you know. And honestly, you know, I says, how could you write a revolutionary book when you have the air-conditioned room and the hotel and all this other stuff? Do it under candlelight. Do it in the mountains. You know, do it during, you know what I mean? There's two different revolutions.
Right.
The one the white man tells us how to live, because he keeps telling us there is not going to be one. Yes, it is, and we're going to wipe him out. And, you know, and he doesn't want to hear that, because he has to go. He doesn't want to hear himself that they're going to go. I think that they should be true to themselves, but we also should be disciplined in terms, you know, the alcohol, the drugs, the dealing of it, that's their game, you know. And you know, if we're going to meet the Creator, we should know where we're going in the spirit world and be prepared for that, to understand that everything that they do, from the music to whatever, they steal from us, turn it around, pimp it back to us in a sexist way. I think more men should understand that they have mothers and they have sisters, so they should respect the women, the givers of life, you know, because it's easy to make a child, you know, but mm-hmm. it's harder to raise it. You can't just have it and leave it with the woman, you know, and this is what we do at our youth conference. We have ceremonies for babies to touch the earth, because they're under, like, 9 months old, 9 months, and so they're, you know, to bring it to the youth that you can make a child, but you got to take care of it and you have a responsibility. And for those young men, you know, where you see a young woman that has a baby or has a child, we're all the fathers. We're all the mothers, you know. So, if some people just want to, you know, go to that stereotype, pregnant and barefooted, you know, that's a white man's thing, you know. There's a lot of things to admit. You know, pick up their pants. You know, only punks in the prison where I'm like that. You know, people
exactly.
who take drugs, you know. It's part of the United States system to keep us oppressed. You know, the disrespect for the women and mothers and things like that, because this is what we teach here at Redwood. People come and they stay. It's a training place to learn respect, discipline. You know, we have an archery and a shooting range, the sweat lodge to purify, and workshops, work classes. People use it as a retreat, you know, but it's not going to be all the comforts like Holiday Inn, you know. It's mountain, you know. Everybody has to come and camp. But the youth, because of their energy, it's good. You know, I think one of the organizations, they have like a 5-year plan. You have to study and read and know, you know. But don't, you know, it's like when we were youth, we have all this energy and stuff, you know. So wait till they calm down and then work with them again, you know. And we broke down how our tradition and our culture has been redefined, you know. Before the woman ate first, you know, and then the, you know, the elders, the women, the elder women, the women, the pregnant women, and then the children, to be disciplined to wait until the women ate first, and then the men. But then when the European Spanish people came, then the man had to eat first, because he had to go to work, because he didn't hunt anymore or gather food, so he had to go work for the enemy and then bring back money to buy food to feed us, so he had to eat first. So that's like we're talking about redefining and understanding how they changed us to where we're at. And it may take a lifetime. And I think if people understand that, it's going to take a lifetime or dedicated to give your life for the movement and for your people, and to understand that our people are lost and are confused, but that shouldn't stop us from forward. You know, like they would tell us, Kwame would say, you know, if you don't belong to an organization, then join one or make one, you know. And so
exactly.
I didn't fit in some of the organizations because it's so institutionalized, you know. And so, you know, now because people say you shouldn't say who you are, you know, but I'm a spiritual revolutionary freedom fighter. I think those are the terms, you know. it's like there's no turning back. I stepped that line. I hate the government, and I'll hate it to my death.
That was an interesting answer. I really appreciate your answer. They have another question. They want to know what do you think, what are some of the experiences that you've experienced because you are a woman? Was it harder because you're a woman, and did you experience some form of sexism?
You know, in the beginning when I was young, I really didn't take attention, you know, because it seemed like there was nobody out there anyway, you know. So it's just like, you know, people kind of wanted you to be their kind of leader, to lead the thing. And it was all of us, you know. When you're young kids, you work more together, you know. But then I think the last 10, 15 years, I've seen how sexist it is now, even worse. You know what I mean? You know, when we were at Big Mountain, this was back in 86, and it wasn't that bad. I mean, the government was going to come in, and they were going to kill all of us. So there was no time to say, I'm better than you. You know, if you know how to dig a hole, you know how to clean a rifle, you know how to shoot it, then, you know, then.
Right.
Other times, it depends on how much time you have. When you have time, you know, you only got time enough to sober up, clean up, and use a gun and shoot straight. You know, and other times if you have time to speak and talk, then it get into all kinds of stuff, you know. But the white women's lib is white women's lib, because in traditionally the women controlled. The women had the last say. It was their husband, their son that was going off to war, hunt, whatever. So, you know, and I like that tradition.
Okay. That's interesting. Awful. Let's see, what else did they ask? You kind of touched on that. I'm thinking you touched on what advice would you give someone coming into the leadership role. But I guess they want you to go more in detail upon that.
About leadership? What leadership?
Yeah, about becoming a leadership within the, I guess with the, I hope that, I know they're not referring to the white man's pale face leadership, but I mean, as far as our movement, I'm assuming. I hate to assume, but we're going to assume tonight, Queen.
I think we have, or we are, have a long ways to go. You know, I think we should just get ourselves a tight group and move forward instead of the masses, because the masses follow, you know. And I think cause so we could have change quick, you know, because it's like the Robert's Rule of Confusement. You know, everybody wants to have a say. Why don't we go and do it, you know, instead of wasting some time. And I think the leadership that we had, you know, the leadership, they killed them all, the true ones, because they gave their lives. You know, I think if someone in prison or in jail, you know, because of what they stood up, those are leaders. You know, you can still, you know, because they're in there sacrificing themselves, like Peltier. You know, he didn't do no killing, but he's in there and he's doing time. But he's doing time for us, and the government knows that. Because I think it was during the anniversary of the Million Man March or the Family March, one of them marches, we talked about Peltier. Well, 2 weeks later, the government had, you know, FBI's had a rally saying, kind of making it sound like Peltier killed 400 FBI agents. You know what I mean? And so
yeah.
It's like they try to tell as well, he's going to stay in jail as long, you know? And if they can okay casinos, then why can't they okay to free him? Because as long as we're indigenous people, and we say we're indigenous people, and he says he's from Turtle Mountain, that is an indigenous land base. He is sovereign. He should be free. You know, he's a prisoner of war, not a prisoner. And, you know, a prisoner, a political prisoner, the prisoner of war. And this country knows it, you know. And that's why I says we need to travel outside this country and expose it for what it is. It has no resources left. Why can't we go and use our resources and let other countries dig it up instead of them digging it up, you know? This country has showed us no mercy, nothing, you know. So it's like, why should we care for them? You know, they haven't showed us anything. Our elders are still dying. They're relocating. The grandmas back in 86 and 2001 and 2005 in Big Mountain, Arizona. And then when their satellites go down, you know, in the sky, then they want to come to our elders to see if they have a spiritual connection to go and turn them back on. How dare them even think that way? you know? And for people to understand, there are no federal pipe carriers. There's no indigenous teacher medicine man that they would call and also have a PhD. It's not a reality, you know, because you got a lot of these, fake messiahs. You know, everybody wants to run a sweat. And I feel sorry because our people never had anything, but they have no right to run our ceremonies and stuff, you know. So that's why I said, if I'm going to pray, then I pray for their death. I pray for their stupidity and their ignorance, and, you know, they should go down with the enemy. You know, that's why I said there has to be clear plans of what we're doing. I mean, you know, I think we all should agree that we don't like the white man. I think we all should agree that imperialism is racism, it's institutional racism. It's never going to be for us because it was never set up to be for us. So why can't we take back what is ours? You know, we're not taking anything that didn't belong to us. And I think that's what they don't want to hear. You know, and we're talking about corporations, we're talking about the church. I can't see a Catholic revolutionary. It's not a reality. Christianity was just to poison our brain and our thoughts. And I think we have to eliminate them, and we need better warriors, educated warriors, intelligent warriors with traditional behind them to teach the younger people to be proud of who they are and to die for what they are. They're dying in the streets already, shooting each other up. Why don't they just aim straight?
Yes, I definitely agree. I'm responding to some of the brothers and sisters here in the chat room. Trying to read this other message. Some of these questions are really great, but it's just, I guess, the wording of them, so I have to kind of get to the main point of what they're saying. What are you doing to ensure you continue to grow and develop as a leader of your nation?
Well, I personally don't believe in leadership in terms of I support the elders, and as long as they're alive and teaching tradition. But once I don't see any of these elders, because there's only a handful left in this whole country that are real. And then if I see them not and I'm still alive, then it's all out war. I honestly believe that this country has to be smashed. It has to be, it has to have a new phase. It has to be, you know, redone. Just done with. You know, I don't think that this country can continue oppressing us as a people, you know, and that our people are still starving, and we're in 2011 and our people are still starving, and our people are called illegal because they forced them off their land to come over here. How did these white people get here in the first place? Weren't they kicked out of the land? Didn't they run away supposedly for prayer? But we say their goal was that gold. All the lion pits of the burials of the California Indians along California missions, you know, it has to be destroyed. They're killers, they're thieves, they're punks. I mean, that's all they were, really. I mean, they had orgies and sex in the church. You know, how could we even believe in their way? You know, I honestly believe that, you know, that we all have to come together, and that our elders who have the purity of heart and the purity of mind, and they're not hung up on materialism, because it's like they never had it. You know, they had their ceremony, which is the earth, the air, the water, and that's what we do here at Redwood. We do prayer. But if they interfere with my prayer, what does it go? My God and my gun, you know? They have a gun, you know? They have an army. Why can't we have one, you know? And I think that's what we have to do to wake up our youth. And our youth are mad, and our youth are pissed off. And I think that our youth, you know, if some of them want to go off, let them. What are we afraid of? You know, are we afraid that the white man's listening? He's already listening. He didn't want us to connect in the first place. You know, hey, he's already there, you know. So let's talk about him and what he's done and what he continues to do. I'm pissed off of what he continues to do, shit.
Yeah, I definitely can attest to that.
So you did, you touched on some things. Oh, we have like about, wow, we didn't really talk. I haven't even been keeping up with the time, Queen. I just been really listening to you. I hadn't even been talking. I just been listening to you. We have roughly 5 minutes. Can you sum up in 5 minutes?
Revolution. No.
No. It's all good.
Yeah.
No, if you can sum up in 5 minutes, what your opinion, what you would like to, I guess, would like to say in on the terms of working with other people, or what your goal is and what you want
to
do.
Never
give
up.
The next following year.
Never give up. I'm working towards our youth conference. Never give up. I'm hoping that I'm traveling with Malik to Europe. You know, and I hope it's fun, and you know, I want to work closer with the Black community. I mean, down root close, so that we can share whatever we have, you know, and take what's ours from the white man and use it for each other. I really want to see a unity, a united front. I believe, you know, in revolution and a spiritual revolution, because it's my heart and soul that is for the people, you know, and I hope that everyone understands that I'm not attacking us as a people. I'm attacking the government that's listening 24/7 on this, you know, and he knows that I still hate it. You
got me
on that. What I'm... Yeah.
We've been monitored now. So well.
Yeah.
That's true.
And others. How did Doc say, and others?
Right, and others, yeah. Brother Valko used to say, what did he used to say? He used to definitely say, what did he say? He was like, brothers and sisters and enemies, student agents too, because
yeah,
they're all over everywhere. And like you did say, I mean, and we show historically that they do put people, our own people in our organizations, to infiltrate us, to bring down the nation. And that still happens. I've seen it. It still goes on to this day. That it still happens, and unfortunately we are affected by this. So we have to really just really start cleaning house and continue to organize and continue to build and establish allies with different nations. And I think that's important, because we do have a common enemy in hand, you know, the pale face, the system, the state, you know what I mean? We can't get away from it. Even if I wanted to, I could walk away, but I know in my heart it's still... You know what I mean? I'm still oppressed, so why quit? Or, you know, it's just no retreat. It's fighting. It's no retirement home for Panthers. It's no retirement home for the Red Man. It's not any of us that does this type of work. It's no retirement home. I don't understand why some of our elders just go and retreat, because it's not over and it's not going to get any better if we don't stand up and we fight. We have to fight. But anything else you want to say? I mean, I know that, you know, I know it's just been 2 hours, and I know we only have so much time, 2 minutes left. But, you know, it's still so much work to be done, and it's so much that I really want to say and really want to do. And I know, do you have anything else you want to say? Anything else? Contact information, do any drops, anything?
Yeah. If you want to call 805-235-6559 or warriorwoman74@yahoo, I think that we just have to continue, you know, and never give up, you know, never give up, and that it's a lifetime of struggle, and that we've learned from leaders, honest leaders, real leaders that gave their lives. Those are the true leaders that gave their lives to the people, and love the people more than they love themselves. And I think that it's important that we never even give them the thought that we're not going to be able to. We are. And always think that positive, that we are going to get rid of them. They are going to, you know. I mean, the sun, they get cancer by the sun. So, hey, pray more for the sun.
Our people don't, so we're fine. We love the sun. What I want to do is I definitely want you to come. I want to invite you back on really, really soon in the near future, because we didn't really touch a lot that I really wanted to touch, but we did touch enough. And I definitely want you to come on way before
the I guess it's the event that you got coming up.
Yeah,
because I want you to definitely promote that. And if you can, you can have more people to come on with you, you know, more representatives if you would like. That is open to you. This is your show tonight.
Oh,
you have
good.
More
okay.
people come on. When you have more people to come on, you can have more of them to come on. But they're going to hang up on us in a bit of a minute. So
okay.
I'm going to stay in contact with you, Queen. I promise I will.
Okay. Cool.
I really appreciate you again for coming on the show. I really appreciate you spreading the knowledge and us getting more information and just being able to rep the way that you have. And I appreciate your struggle. I personally appreciate your struggle and what you went through. And, you know, I appreciate meeting you and that kind of thing. But
I think you really on the air because, you know, these are the only times they really get to hear us, you know. Only
I definitely do.
So I thank you. Fidamia.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Black Power, and you have a beautiful
okay,
night.
Okay, Black Power.
In a sense, and I want to continue to struggle with you. Black Power.
Black Power.